Welcome to the podcast, hosted by the Journal of Healthcare Contracting. And now, our host, Scott Adams.
Well, hello there. Here we are at episode 2 of the Back to Wellness series, sponsored by McKesson. And today we're talking about reopening ASCs, some of the key challenges and perspectives there. We have a handful of guests on today's call I'm excited about. We have Dr. Luis Rios Jr., MD. And we have Chrissy Benz, who is a consultant for Progressive Surgical Solutions. And I'm so happy to have both of these guests on today and looking very much forward to a great conversation as we start to reopen surgery centers across the United States. So here we go with the podcast. Dr. Rios, I'd like to just start the questions with you this morning, if I can. Nearly every aspect of healthcare and our daily lives have changed over the last several months, obviously. I've been doing a handful of podcasts over the last week or so, and everybody's term is the new norm. What are some of the things that you'll be watching for in the surgical services as they start to pick back up?
So in Texas, we've already gotten back to work here since May 1st. And so some of the things that were required and what we're looking at is, doing mitigation protocols, but our medical board, and I think every doctor that goes back to practice is going to have to go back to, what the laws are and what you have to do to get back to work. So we're still doing social distancing. We've got someone in the front of the office who's checking in patients, checking their temperatures. We've got questionnaires. So now the practice has turned into, doing mitigation strategies to keep everything safe for our patients, for our staff, for the doctors. And it's being compulsive and making sure that everybody's following the rules. And so now we got kind of a new way of doing things, doing screening, keeping the number of people in the office down a little bit until we get back to more normal.
So you guys are back up and running, and you have been for over a month at this point. What are some of the things you've learned in that process, and what are you hearing from your peers? What are some things that are going really well for you guys?
So I think the first thing was that when you go back to practice to communicate with your staff, some of the offices may have had their staffs on furlough or unemployed, and so before you start, you got to get your staff back in and kind of go over all the protocols that you're going to do. And then you got to get all the protective equipment and all that. So first getting everything started, you just can't open from one day to the next. And then I think it's kind of practicing, maybe having a few runs with a few patients and open up slowly before you go full speed. Once you do that, you'll see that your staff will become more comfortable with the protocols. So it's like, my advice would be just don't open up the floodgates right away. It's kind of start slowly, work your way up, get your policies and procedures all practiced up and, everything well oiled. And then I think once you do that, everyone feels comfortable and then the practices are up and running. And what I'm hearing from my colleagues is that, especially in Texas, is that, there's still a pretty high demand for surgical services and non-surgical services. And I think the patients really appreciate, the extra effort we're putting in to implement our policies and procedures and keep them safe.
Chrissy, I'm going to jump over to you if I could with this next question, just because you're, as a consultant in the surgery center world, you're seeing a bunch of different types of surgery centers with a bunch of different types of procedures going on. What types of patients are your folks seeing today?
I think it's varying from state to state because obviously the guidelines and requirements to resume elective surgery vary from state to state. They even sometimes vary from city to city. I mean, San Francisco just put out guidelines for resumption of elective surgery, and you have to put together this huge packet present to the city in order to resume. So I think it varies. I think in some places people are kind of back to normal a little bit, obviously not in terms of caseload. It also depends on PPE, to be perfectly honest. I was actually just having a conversation yesterday with our consulting team because the N95 respirators have been a big issue. Being able to get them, being able to get a variety of sizes of them, and then being able to appropriately fit test your employees per OSHA requirements. So for example, some facilities, they just can't get it and they can't get their employees fit test. They can't get the N95s and they can't get their employees fit tested. So they're just not doing general anesthesia right now. So obviously that's really limiting in terms of depending on what your scope of services is for the facility. But otherwise, I mean, I think, you know, ophthalmic surgery centers, they're probably pretty much back to doing all their regular procedures. It varies. It really depends on if you're doing aerosol generating procedures where you need those N95 respirators and whether or not you're able to get them and get your people fit tested.
To come back to talking about patients a little bit, Dr. Rios, how are you prioritizing your patients and how's that selection changed?
So we do have a screening questionnaire that we use. And what we try to do is kind of do a stratification system where we have, you know, a high risk, medium risk, and low risk patient. And the high risk patient would be someone who has COVID or is taking care right now of somebody who has COVID. And so those types of patients who are at high risk, we'll just try to reschedule them and keep in touch with them so they kind of get into a lower risk category. So, you know, and then the low risk and medium risk, we'll do it on a case by case basis. But I think most practices are stratifying their patients and have a classification system and have a screening questionnaire that a lot of times we'll go over the day before with this patient before they arrive. And then when they arrive, we do the screening questionnaire and we do the temperature checks. And that's all just part of the mitigation process.
Yeah, absolutely. Chrissy, to come back to you again, because you're in talking with so many different types of surgery centers, how's balancing the implementation of these new protocols with the need to see as many patients as possible going?
Yeah, I mean, it's been tough. There was actually a study that was published in the British Journal of Surgery like a week or two ago that showed that COVID-19 pandemic has postponed 28 million elective surgeries around the world, and each additional week with the disruption of services could lead to 2.4 million more surgery cancellations. So the reality is that we have patients that need surgery. And yes, even though they're elective, it doesn't necessarily mean that they shouldn't be being done. I mean, I have numerous stories of people who needed surgery and they didn't fall under the definition of urgent or emergent during the shutdown of elective surgery that I would completely disagree with. But the fact of the matter is that people need these surgeries done. So, you know, I think that the thing that has been the most difficult is it really depends on the size of the surgery center. So, you know, that is going to depend on how many patients you can roll through on a daily basis. Your volume, probably a lot of facilities are seeing their volume pretty much cut in half. And I think that's kind of where people started, like, let's just bring back 50% of our volume, see how we can do it with the implementation of social distancing and, you know, waiting appropriate times and all those kinds of things. And then some we have heard have been able to increase their daily volume. So I think it's a matter of, you know, communication with your staff, like Dr. Rios had said, and then also just education and to implement all these new protocols and processes. But, you know, like it is the new normal. And so once everybody kind of gets it down, hopefully they'll be able to increase their volume. But some facilities, depending on the size of their facility, are going to be limited forever. You know, if you only have a certain amount of pre-op and PACU bays and we still have to continue to space patients apart, they will only be able to bring a certain amount of patients in that, you know, for the day. So I think those are the greatest challenges when it comes to that.
Yeah, as you talk about that, I've heard several times, you know, elective surgeries are elective surgeries until they're not. And so.
Correct. I know somebody who needed brain surgery, and she has had brain surgery before, and they said, we can't do it until you have a seizure. And she had a seizure, and they ended up doing it. But it's like, it doesn't mean that it shouldn't have been done at the time.
Right. So many new challenges out there. And this next question that I have is followed by a handful of bullet point questions under it. So I'm gonna just kind of go through these and let you guys jump in. I'll start with Dr. Rios. What are some of the key challenges around the new protocols?
Well, again, it's implementing them, smoothing things out. You have to educate your patients before they get to the office. So for example, you know, we really encourage them not to bring extra family members or anybody with them unless it's absolutely necessary. When we talk about, like, for example, non-surgical procedures, like we have a spa here, for example, we have people prepared to come in with their hair up, makeup off, you know, kind of educating them that you're going to get in and out. We're not going to be there, you know, for an hour chit-chatting. We're going to kind of get things done quickly. So I think, but you know, I think the thing is that once you kind of get started, after a period of time, it gets a lot smoother. And I think the patients understand and appreciate it, and it'll be the new norm. But I think, you know, depending on the space you have and the PPE you have, it'll work out, and the practices can kind of get back almost up to normal again.
Yeah, that would be definitely the hope, is for the practices to be able to do that. I think that, you know, you mentioned PPE, from a utilization standpoint and taking, you know, effective measures to protect your staff. How are those conversations going with them? And do you feel like there's a good amount of information out there for the proper use of the PPE and conservation of it?
Yeah, I think there is. And I think that, and probably Christy can talk about it too, is that, you know, as a physician, or if you're the office manager, you know, you've got to take leadership. And so you need to be informed. So whoever's going to be leading, you know, the surgery center or the office needs to be aware of, you know, what information is out there and needs to start communicating. We started a WhatsApp group during the COVID time when we weren't in the office, so we could continue to communicate. Then when we decided to start the practice back up, we had meetings ahead of time and kind of went through, you know, all the protocols and the policies and procedures, and we talked about the PPE. So for example, with the N95 masks, we do preserve them, and, you know, we keep them in a paper bag, for example, because that's better than a plastic bag. So, you know, these are all things that whoever's going to be in charge of the COVID policies needs to be informed about, and then relay that messaging to your staff. And I think once you have open communication and they can ask their questions and get them answered correctly, they start feeling a little more comfortable with it. There's always going to be a little hesitancy. And it's interesting because every individual is different. There's some people that aren't really afraid of the COVID, and there's some staff members that are very afraid. And usually, you know, they have families and they don't want to get their children sick. So I think it's the open communication, but whoever's going to, it's almost like you got to have someone who's going to lead this and really understand the research that's out there, the concepts that are out there. So you can, that person can be the focal point, and people can come to them and ask questions and get them answered. And you know, you're doing it, you need to do everything correctly. Don't be making up stuff, you know, need to be informed. Fortunately, now we have a lot of podcasts like this that give a lot of information. So it's not hard to get that information.
It's interesting, Dr. Rios, that you say you need to have someone leading it. I did a podcast yesterday with a gentleman that was formerly with the CDC, and that was almost his number one advice was communication, and have somebody in your organization that's kind of taking the lead on this and getting their information from the right sources versus right. You know, something off the web.
I think that's really important. And I'm also the president of the Texas Society of Plastic Surgeons. And right off the bat, we started a WhatsApp group with our 300 members, and it grew and grew and grew. And we have a lobbyist that works in Texas that's very well connected. So, you know, there's so many rumors out there on social media and all that. And so, you know, I had to become like the person that would interpret the governor's orders, would interpret the Texas Medical Board's orders, would interpret the Texas Department of Licensing and Regulations, who deals with estheticians and cosmetologists, because the language is not very clear. And so we as a group of plastic surgeons were able to kind of get through this and interpret this and understand when we could get our practices going. And then in addition to that, we were feeding information about the safe practices on how to get back, how to deal with your staff. And, you know, we even talked about at the beginning how to get your PPP financing through the government. You know, we talked about how to furlough employees if that's what you needed to do. So the communication was so key of just getting everybody, you know, prepared to get back, but also to kind of handle it when we were out of the practice.
I love the proactiveness of that. That just is, to hear you guys being proactive and not having to be reactive is great. And I know you guys were rearing and ready to get back to doing what you do, which is take care of people. And I personally would just like to thank you for everything you do on a daily basis. This is the one question I want to ask both Chrissy and Dr. Rios. And that is, what are some plans that you've done, Dr. Rios or Chrissy, you're seeing some of your facilities do to plan for PPE and making sure that they have what they need on hand?
Well, from my point of view, fortunately, you know, we kind of stock for a period of time before surgery because we've gone through shortages before. And so we know that, you know, for essential things, we stock up ahead of time. And McKesson's just done an excellent job helping us out with that. So if we have a history with McKesson, we can place our orders and eventually they're going to get filled. But as far as like, you know, N95 masks, we are reusing them. We have, for example, we have an ultraviolet system in our office, in our spa, so we can run our masks through that. And we try to keep our masks for a week. And then just be real careful, like with all the other PPEs, and use, you know, just before you just, you know, be throwing off gloves, you know, right and left and all that. But now being a little bit more careful and thinking about getting a little bit multiple use where it's appropriate. Now, you're not going to do anything dangerous when you're seeing a patient, right? But, you know, just be a little bit more careful with that. But with the, especially with N95 masks, we're kind of keeping them for a week and then, you know, and then kind of keeping them clean and then replacing them every week so that we don't run out too. I'm sure Chrissy probably has some ideas and experiences. Yeah. She's in her surgery centers.
Yeah, you have to be careful. I mean, the reality is that there are three different capacity strategies. So there's conventional, contingency, and crisis capacity. And where most healthcare facilities have been working under the crisis capacity strategies at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, they were doing, you know, extended wear, reuse of PPE. There's no way that you have to don and doff everything and stuff. But with the resumption of elective surgery, most of the guidelines have said that basically, you cannot resume elective surgery unless you are equipped with an adequate amount of PPE. And I think that's one of the things that facilities across the country are struggling with. It's challenging, but the crisis, like you should not be working underneath crisis capacity strategies. And that was very clear. So extended wear, wearing them throughout the day, but there are a number of organizations that are also doing decontamination of the PPE, especially the N95s. And I think that we're seeing that a lot of facilities are utilizing those companies for decontaminating the supply so that they're not having to depend on getting new shipments in.
So I've taken up a lot of you guys' time. And so I want to in the podcast, I'm going to pose a question to Chrissy. You know, based off of what we just heard Dr. Rios talking about there, how have you seen the staff training and employee health stuff starting to take shape in some of your surgery centers?
Yeah, I mean, I think Dr. Rios made a really good point. I mean, obviously, you're kind of on one end of the spectrum or the other with COVID. You're either a little scared of it, or you're kind of like, let's just reopen and go with this. And I think you're going to find that your staff is on one side or the other. So just making sure that everybody is aware of what the protocols are, that everybody is self-monitoring, that communication is key. Like if you are sick or if somebody you live with is sick, that you need to communicate that to your manager, making sure that, you know, the screening protocols are in place and making sure that your employees feel safe. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest things. I mean, I know a facility who had reached out to me because there was an employee complaint regarding PPE. And so they had an unannounced visit from the State Department of Health. So those are obviously situations that we want to avoid. And so you want to make sure that your employees feel like they have the adequate PPE that they need to feel safe and to be able to continue to provide elective surgery. And so training and following up on implementation of that training as well, making sure that somebody, like it's already been said, but somebody needs to be checking at a minimum on a weekly basis with your state updates, CDC updates, any kind of other updates in regards to guidance, because it still is changing on a fairly regular basis. And so seeing what changes need to be implemented in your facility and making sure that that's communicated to your entire staff, employees, and your medical staff as well.
So Scott, also something that's important is that when, you know, the COVID pandemic came about, I know my surgery center, I'm accredited by Quad ASF. And so they sent out messaging pretty early on saying that we needed to develop policies and procedures, and that when we had our physical inspection in the upcoming year, that we were expected to show, you know, what we had done and the proof of it. And so it really became a real thing, you know. So we've got, you know, notebooks where, you know, when our staff comes in, we take their temperatures, we ask them the questions, you know, and so we take it very seriously. So like what Chrissy said is like, you know, you've got to implement these things. And I think the surgery centers are going to have amended their policy and procedure manuals to include the screening for COVID, and then, you know, keep clear documentation of what they did. And I think that's just good, because it's going to show that you're a safe procedure, a safe facility to your employees. But yes, if you do get inspected by the Texas Department of Health or another Department of Health, or, you know, then you're going to have your, you know, JCO inspection, physical inspection, you're going to have to produce these documents. So, you know, this is just something that surgery centers or practices who haven't opened yet really need to keep in mind. Like, really get those books out, make those books, get your protocols out, keep documenting, and have them there, because it's only going to protect you, and it's what is expected of you. And I think that demonstrates to your staff that you're really taking this seriously.
Yeah, that's a great point, Dr. Rios. I also think as patients come back, it makes them feel much more comfortable. To your point earlier, when you mentioned some people aren't afraid of it and some people are just deathly afraid of it, the more that you guys are doing to offset that, I think the better. I actually went and had my teeth cleaned 2 weeks ago, and I have friends that are like, "You did?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I don't have a fear of it." And, you know, I was in the room, they took me straight back. I wasn't in the lobby for more than 30 seconds, and I was with the hygienist, and she literally looked like she was about to launch to the moon with all of the gear that she had on. I felt so sorry for her, but I didn't feel nervous at all. They couldn't polish my teeth or do anything like that. It was just a basic cleaning. But I think what you just said is spot on, kind of for where patients and employees staff are at, you know, across the board.
Right.
You know?
And even us as surgeons, right? Because sure. some of us are in the high risk group because we're a little bit older, maybe have some comorbidities. So, you know, we've got to protect ourselves too. So yeah, it goes all the way around, from patients to staff, you know, visitors, you know, even people like Chrissy who might be walking in, you know, to your facility. You know, we got to protect everybody.
Absolutely. I can't thank you guys enough for being on today. What great information. I'm excited to get this podcast out to the listeners. So thank you all for being here today.
Thank you. Our pleasure.
Anytime. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Hopefully you took some great things away from that. I know I did, and learned some stuff, and we continue to bring these to the JHC audience to try to help you guys as we reopen the country. I really want to say thank you to McKesson Med Surgical for all of their help and for the fact that they sponsor this. We couldn't bring this type of information to you if it wasn't for McKesson. So again, thank you to McKesson for sponsoring this podcast.